Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me to give a talk here. So today I'm going to talk about the work which I am done with Andy Strominger and his graduate students Sabrina Pastersky, Daniel Kapek, Temple here, and Prahar Mitra on trying to relate soft theorems to asymptotic symmetry. So we wrote a couple of papers on archive, and today I'll try to keep my talk to like fairly basic level, so I apologize if you wanted some more details. You can ask about some details and tricky questions after the talk, and sort of all details are written in our papers. But today I'm just try to provide you with some general idea of what is going on and where is it going. And as a basic example for today's talk, I will talk about leading gravity soft theorem, which was derived by Weinberg in 1965, and the relation of this leading soft factor to supertranslations of BMS group derived by Bondi, Messner, Sach, and Vanderburg in around the same time. I think it was 1962. So this choice is motivated by the following reason. So I basically want to talk about correspondence between known and known objects. That's why on this ground we can test the correspondence itself. Because in rest of the examples which we consider it in our papers, it's usually correspondence with one side being unknown or even both sides being presently unknown. But this case is nice because it's known correspondence. And I'm going to proceed in my talk according to the following plan. So I will start with reviewing soft theorems. Then I will briefly review the asymptotic symmetries. And then on the part three, I will relate hopefully one and two. And in remaining time, I will talk about some specific issues and some work in progress, some possible generalizations, but if we have time. Okay, so let me start with soft theorem. So soft theorems is the following idea. So let us consider gravity coupled to some matter fields. We can think about the Einstein gravity coupled to matter. And let me consider n plus one point on shell amplitude. So I have n plus one particles, and all their own shell, and let me assume that one of these particles is a graviton with four momentum q and polarization epsilon. So apparently, if I take a limit, so q square is zero, so let me denote omega as being q naught, which is just energy of a graviton. So in the limit when energy of a graviton goes to zero, so that's what we call a soft limit, this n plus one point amplitude simplifies to the following expression. So it's some operator S, which is called soft factor, acting on n point amplitude. So we just remove this soft graviton and just act with some operator S, which just acts on external states. And this S is universal to first couple of orders in omega, so and there are some non-universal corrections, which are omega to some power. So the result due to Weinberg in 65 was the following statement, that leading contribution to S, which we'll call S0, it has a pole, this famous soft pole, 1 over omega, and S0 is of the following form. So it's epsilon mu nu, mu k. So pk is just moment of external particles, so p1 to pn, divided by p dot q, and summed over all particles. And it's divergent as 1 over omega because of this q in denominator. So apparently, fairly recent, Andy Strominger and Freddy Cacciazzo, using spinner-helicity formalism, showed that this S actually contains several more universal terms. By universal, I mean the following, that this soft factor is independent of the nature of matter fields which are coupled to gravity. So it only depends on external momenta and that's all. And the next universal terms, they will also depend on some other conserved quantities for a matter field. So there is what's called S1 and S2, which are order omega to the 0 and order omega to the 1. So S1, sorry, I'm missing kappa over 2. So kappa square is 32 pi g. So S1 is kappa over 2, sum over k. Okay, let me try to get kappa. Minus I, and here we have the following combination. So with j nu rho, k q rho, pk nu, p dot q. So now you have extra power of q in the numerator and power of q in the denominator, and that's why it has a finite limit as omega goes to 0. And apparently, this soft factor, it depends on the total angular momentum for a k-th particle. So that's why it's still fairly universal and it's independent on it. So S2 is more complicated expression. So we're not going to use it, but just to give you a hint of what it looks like. So kappa square over 4, and it's
and this is all four dimensions?
Yeah. So all this is d equals 4. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So today we're going to talk about gravity in d equals 4. So S2 has this complicated structure where jk is still total angular momentum for a k-th particle. And I think a couple of months after a paper by Strominger and Cacciazzaro, I think it was Zwiebern and collaborators who showed that this result can be actually derived from just usual word identities for gravity. So in a similar way as Weinberg did it for a leading soft factor. So that's why it's sort of independent of application of Pinner-Helicity formula. Yeah.
They also did it in d dimensions, right? It was found in d dimensions.
Yeah. I think this result is generalizable to d dimensions.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that's sort of what is so nice about it, because it's like manifestly written momentum space. So you expect it to be generalized to d dimensions.
Well, yeah. I'm curious. Is the implication here that at the next order, you get some non-universal term?
Yeah, so at the next order, you don't have like enough relations to fix the full structure of a soft coefficient. So Zvi and collaborator showed that some components you can actually fix, but there are some components which are unfixed by symmetry.
But in every dimension, you have exactly three universal terms?
Yeah, for gravity. So for example, for a gauge theory interacting with a charged matter, there will be only two universal components.
I see.
So it depends on the on kind of interaction you consider. Okay, so and let me make one simple observation from the structure of this soft coefficient. So as I say, we consider all particles to be on shell, which means that epsilon mu nu is defined up to the following transformation. So I can shift it by q mu lambda nu. So it's still another physical epsilon mu nu. So under this shift, delta S0 changes by a following amount. So it's kappa, sum over k, pk mu, lambda mu. And basically, the soft theorem should tell me that this delta S is unphysical, which means that delta S applied to any S matrix element should be 0. And that's not surprising, because we expect that matrix element is non-trivial only if total momentum is conserved. So basically, the structure of S0 already knows about total momentum conservation. So the fact that it's 0, from this follows that. And total momentum conservation is somehow related to a translational symmetry. So that's, and translational symmetry is like any symmetry is asymptotic symmetry. That's why it's probably the simplest example of how you can see that the knowledge about soft factors is related to some knowledge about symmetry. And the similar thing is true for S1. So the fact that S1 is is invariant under this change of polarization, basically, from this you can derive the total angular momentum should be conserved. So and therefore you may conjecture that somehow S1 is related to some angular momentum generalization of S0. So we will see that S0 is somehow related to super translations of BMS group, and S1 might be related to super rotation. Okay. So now let me.
And
S2? Or you... So S2 is actually invariant under this transformation because of the anti-symmetry. So J nu rho is anti-symmetric, and that's why all combinations you will have like JQJ, mm-hmm. which is zero because anti-symmetry of J. So we don't need any conserved mm-hmm. quantity to have S2 for invariance of S2. That's why
it comes for free. It's not
it comes for free.
I see.
Okay, are there any more questions about like software? Yes.
So S0 is just a number, right? And S1 and S2 are operators acting on the...
In momentum space, yes. So in momentum basis, S0 is just multiplication by some number. But in principle, you can consider some other basis for initial out states, and then like if you consider some kind of strange position basis, then S0 will be like operator in position basis or something. So I'm saying that generally it's an operator. So in some cases it's just a trivial operator.
Yes. And S1 and S2 are the same status or they're different?
So S1 and S2 sign the angular momentum, so then even momentum basis it's still like PDP, so it's the differential operator on momentum basis. So
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and it also contains, and it's only angular momentum, and it also contains a spin operator, which actually acts on some external indices for your physical polarizations. That's why it's an operator in any case.
But the structure of what you just said is you've got these three things, and you suggested that S0 and S1 are related to conservation momentum and conservation rate momentum.
Yeah.
But then you're in fact going to derive it with a much larger symmetry, which is the BMS.
Yeah, so we will see that the full structure of S0 is somehow related to a larger symmetry. Yeah, so the some small thing about S0, like invariance under this change, is related to some simple symmetry. So, but hopefully I will convince you that S0 has something to do with BMS supertranslation.
But is the implication that there should be something like a supertranslation in higher dimensions then as well, since we have a soft graviton theorem here?
Okay, that's a hard question. So I would say the following, that right now we are trying to generalize all these considerations to a higher dimension. So, and it seems that it is at least possible to do in even dimensions. So in odd dimensions, you are running into trouble that in order to define square plus, you actually need to define large R expansion. And large R expansion in odd dimensions will have semi-integer powers, half-integer powers. And that's why it's not clear whether there is a notion of scry plus in odd dimensions, like notion of scry in usual sense in odd dimensions. So in even dimensions, there is no problem. It's still expansion in integer powers.
I thought there was a well-established notion of scry plus in odd dimensions. It may not be exactly what you want.
Okay, yeah. So we can discuss it after that. So. But I'm saying that it's possible to do it in even dimensions when everything is nice and smooth. So, and hopefully we will at some point finish this project. Okay, so let me proceed to part two, which is asymptotic symmetry. So since we're dealing with gravity, the gauge group is just diffeomorphisms. So we say that the metric G mu nu has a symmetry, so let psi be just a vector field. So delta G mu nu is some V derivative of G mu nu with respect to xi. So this is delta xi, change of metric under the action of diffeomorphism psi. So we say that xi is the symmetry of a metric if xi of G mu nu is just zero. So xi is a Killing vector field. So that's what we call symmetries. That's what we usually call symmetries in gravity. However, this notion can be generalized to include asymptotic symmetry. So you want to say that, let me consider such xi that xi of G mu nu somehow vanishes at infinity. So that's a generalization to asymptotic symmetry. So in order to make this statement precise, we will use a definition of not usual definition of asymptotic symmetry group, which is all over diffeomorphisms. Modular trivial difference. So in order to define a logit and trivial, I need to somehow specify what do I mean goes to zero at infinity. So what do I mean by infinity and what do I mean by goes to zero? And certainly there is a way to do it in natural way using conformal factors and all this stuff. But for the sake of this discussion, I will just use some good coordinate system where all these notions will be very explicit and nice. So the coordinate system which I'm going to use is so-called Bondi coordinates. So the usual Minkowski metric, four-dimensional Minkowski metric, which is in this Bondi coordinates has the following form. So I'm saying that x0 is u plus let me first go to retarded coordinates where x0 is u plus r and xi is given by xi hat as a function of v times r. So xi hat is nothing but an embedding of s2 into r3. So if you choose a complex coordinate on s2, just usual vz bar coordinates in such a way that metric on s2 has this form. So then this embedding is very simple. So if I do this transformation, my Minkowski metric will be of the form minus du square minus 2 du dr plus twice r square gamma zz bar dz zz bar. So sometimes I will, instead of zz bar, I will use the a coordinate, and instead of gamma zz bar, I'll use more general gamma ab, just to keep formulas as short as possible. So that's my Minkowski metric, and now I'm saying that I will define the class of asymptotically flat metrics by saying that that the difference between Minkowski metric and asymptotically flat metric has the following radial behavior. So, for example, delta GEU, we allow a correction of order 1 over r. So original thing was 1, order 1, and we allow 1 over r correction. And in a similar way, delta GUR is order 1 over r square. Delta GAR is 0, which is Bondi gauge condition. So using gauge freedom, you can gauge fix delta GRR being 0 and GAR also being 0. And the last gauge freedom, the last component of gauge freedom, I will use to fix the determinant of GIB. So I want to say that determinant of GIB, which is just a component in front of DZA, DZB, should be exactly the determinant of a metric on a unit round sphere times r to the fourth. So, and the remaining components of GIB, I allow to have linear in R component, and delta GUA can be order 1. So all these orders, they are sub-leading to original Minkowski metric. So let me try to explain what is the geometric meaning of R and what is the meaning of Lasher. So if I draw my Penrose diagram for Minkowski space, then constant R slices will be slices like this, where R is increasing in this direction. And R equals infinity slice will be this surface, which we call scry, which has two parts, scry plus and scry minus. So basically, the conditions at R equals infinity is the conditions near null infinity. And the coordinates on SCRI plus, which is R equals infinity, is U coordinate, which is time coordinate, or usually called retarded time along the SCRI plus. And each point of fixed U is a two-sphere parameterized by this ZZ bar component. So each point here is a two-sphere. So it's S2. Okay, so so that's why we define allowed diffeomorphisms are such vector fields Xi, so that leak Xi of J mu nu will satisfy this boundary condition. So in order to define trivial diffeomorphisms, let me turn these boundary conditions into boundary data. So which means that I will just write this allowed deformations of a metric with arbitrary coefficients as a function of u and z. So for example, this condition in GUU, I will turn into to m over r du square, where m is a function of z and u. And in the same way, I can turn the rest of the components into, for example, minus 2ua dz du. So then I can add 2 beta over r squared u dr.
So you're saying the order is not just bound, you're really saying that some limit exists. I mean, you're not allowing yourself a vector like sine of r in front of the...
Yeah. So I want to have like smooth one of our expansion. Okay, and delta GIB will be parameterized by called R times CIB VDB, where CIB is a traceless. Okay. Yeah. Keep notations uniform. And gamma IB. And such choice of boundary conditions is motivated by the gravitational wave solution. So basically, the whole idea of the symbiotic symmetry groups is to just choose the right boundary conditions when you still have something better than just empty Minkowski space and some configurations with finite energy. So if you choose the boundary conditions too strong, then you end up with just Minkowski space and no interesting perturbations. And if you choose them too weak, then you will have some perturbations with infinite energy in Minkowski space. So that's why this set of conditions is motivated by finite energy perturbations top of Minkowski space, and they include gravitational waves. And in particular, the condition that this matrix solves Einstein equations tells you that the really independent data is actually two components of CAB as a function of U and Z, which exactly describes two components of a physical graviton. So that's sort of a nice match with what we physically expect from good asymptotically flat matrices. Okay. So then we will define trivial diffeomorphism as a diffeomorphism which acts non-trivially on this boundary data. Now when we have defined allowed and trivial, we can actually compute a symbiotic symmetry group, or rather use the old result by Bondi, Meissner, Sach, and Vanderburg. So maybe it should be B square MS because there are four authors, which tell us that in four dimensions, the asymptotic symmetry group is semi-direct product of just Lorentz rotations and super translations. Okay, there is some fancy sign. So today I'm not actually going to talk about generalizing this SO1, 3. So let me just concentrate on super translation part of this group. So super translations, they correspond to a following set of vector fields. So it's they parameterized by a function in a sphere F, which is arbitrary function of Z or Z and Z bar. Du minus dA F R dA. And plus some irrelevant one of our corrections. Okay, and the action on physical data, which is CAB, is given by the following expression. So it's this term, which is just action on restricted vector field to describe plus, plus some inhomogeneous term, which is of this form, and I need to subtract trace, because F should be traceless. So. Okay. Are there any questions on asymptotical symmetry groups? So all this stuff is not new, it's like fairly old studied stuff from 60s, and it was derived and rederived in various aspects. So
what are these super translations doing sort of geometrically?
So geometrically, they doing the following. So if you have a sphere S2 at some value like u equals 1, so then as you go to a sphere at value u equals 2, you are allowed to move arbitrary point on a sphere. So sphere at u equals 2 will be something like this. So we basically take point here and move it by amount f of z1, and take another point, move it by amount f of z2. So it's some deformation of this s2. So like on the screen, that's sort of the best way I can describe.
Oh, it's a time translation depending on where you're on the sphere, or say differently, you move along the generator as a scribe, but you can move as far as you want, you don't have to move the same amount along each generator.
I see. So it's just time translation by a different amount.
Yeah, it's like changing one cut of scribes arbitrator.
Yeah, maybe just to give you more confusion. So some particular case is f equals 1. So f equals 1 corresponds to a vector field just du, which is normal time translation in global Minkowski coordinates. Mm-hmm. The spatial translations, di in Minkowski coordinates, they have f being exactly these functions x hat of z. So they are like L equals 1 harmonics on the sphere. And basically the idea of supertranslation is to generalize to arbitrary harmonics. Okay. Okay, let me proceed to the main part, which is relating 1 and 2. Okay, I'm not going to use any stuff here. Just to... Okay, and I will do step 3, part 3 in 2 steps. So on a step 1, I will rewrite the Weinberg-Soft theorem. Okay, this Weinberg-Soft theorem in the form of word identity, which means that I will try to rewrite it in the following form, that there is some operator Q whose commutator with S matrix has a trivial matrix element for any in and out states. So, and on a step 2, I will try to convince you that this QF actually generates BMS transformations for both matter fields and gravity fields. So generates supertranslations. Okay, so the step 1 is fairly straightforward. It's just some linear rewriting, and step 2 will require certain assumptions, which hopefully I will have time to explain. Okay, let me start with step 1. As you probably noticed, that BMS transformations are about some transformations in position space, while soft theorem was about momentum space. So we definitely need to have some relation between position momentum space. And this relation is provided by a mode expansion. So let me look at the mode expansion for gravitational perturbation. Let me say that my metric is some Minkowski metric plus some perturbation. And this perturbation has plane wave expansion, so plane wave provides us with complete So it's sum of polarizations, which can be plus minus polarizations. And here we have the following structure. So it's epsilon mu mu alpha star A alpha of e to the IQX plus Hermitian conjugate. And here I have integral over d3q over 2 pi cube. And okay, there is some factor of 1 over omega q. So omega q is absolute value. Okay, so given this mode expansion, so basically this A alpha or A alpha dagger rather, it actually creates this soft graviton with polarization epsilon. With polarization epsilon alpha. So it actually enters the soft theory. While given H mu, I can actually construct CAB by just doing a Korjian transformation. So it's simply dBx mu H mu. I need to carefully put kappa here, and I'm dividing over R and taking the limit R goes to infinity. Okay, so the first important thing to notice is that there is some sort of localization happening for plane waves in for massless plane waves in Minkowski space. And the idea is the following. So as I take R goes to infinity limit of this expression, I basically have e to the IQX, so the phase IQX is given by the following expression. So if I omega q times u with a minus sign minus I omega q times r, and here I have the following expression. It's 1 minus x hat of z. So my CAB is a function of z and u. X hat of z times the thing which I will call q hat. So q hat is simple q vector divided by absolute value. So just direction of plane wave. And basically now, when I take and I integrate over q hat and omega q in this integral. So at r goes to infinity, I can actually use a subtle point approximation for this integral. And the subtle point is given by following value, that x hat of z is exactly equal to a q hat. Because this expression can be rewritten in the following form. So it's actually 1 half of x hat of z minus q hat. Because they both squares to 1. So now from this expression, you clearly see that the plane wave with direction q hat localizes at particular point z on 2 sphere at infinity. And the similar statement actually holds for any massless field. So any massless field has the similar mode expansion, but now instead of polarization tensor, so you either would have a trivial polarization tensor if it's just complex scalar or some other polarization tensor, but all magic happens because of the phase. So and phase is the same for all massless fields. Okay, so now what we obtain from this mode expansion, let me actually look at one more quantity. So let me introduce NAB, which is so-called new standard, which is just du of CAB. And let me look at zero mode of NAB. So NAB zero, which roughly is du, is u integral of NAB, which we will define as a like limit omega goes to zero of Fourier transform. So now, if you go through a careful definition of zero modes, you can show that NAB0 is given by a following expression. So there is some tensor structure, which is complicated, but the important part is that this limit omega goes to zero of the expression, which is omega A dagger of omega X hat of Z. So this zero mode is only function of Z because we integrated over U. So as a function of z, it's given exactly by creation operator of plane wave with momentum direction x. And I remind you that this combination omega times a dagger is exactly combination which you want for a soft theorem. So I can rewrite this schematic expression in the following form. So if I introduce a dagger of Q vector Q in state, it is given by, so if I look at the limit omega goes to zero, then at leading order, let me multiply omega here. So it will be exactly given by full expression. So by multiplying by omega and taking limit omega goes to zero, I project out all this as one and as two terms. And that's exactly the combination which appears for a zero mode of n. So zero mode of n is some linear combination of terms like this. So let me say that polarization alpha here, so S will have some index, subindex alpha, which will label one of the two polarizations. Okay, so now I can write a similar expression for insertion of zero mode of NAB as a function of D in out state, and apparently it's given by the following thing. So it's function of V, VK, and energies. Okay, I will. Where VK and energies are related to original momenta. So original flow factor depend on PK mu. So PK, in the derivation of word identity from a soft theorem, let me make a couple of assumptions. So the first assumption, I will assume that all particles are massless, because it seems that the relevant symmetry lives on square plus. That's why we want particles to actually be able to reach square plus. And it's only possible for a massless particle. I will use two more assumptions to simplify my computation. So I will assume that there is only one soft graviton. So I don't want to get into details of multiple soft limits and various commutators. So I will assume that that all these particles are hard particles with finite momentum, and a momentum only of one particle goes to zero. And the second assumption, I will assume that all my external states, that there are no gravitons in external states. So this assumption is just like simplify some expressions by removing a couple of terms. But they both can be lifted, and derivation can be done in more general form. So that's why we will assume that all these pk mu are momenta for matter particle. So pk mu is null vector. That's why it can be parametrized in the following form. So x hat square is just one. So this is general parameterization for null momentum. So ek is the energy and zk is the direction of momentum. And by this localization argument, zk is actually a point where a plane wave crosses the scribe plus on the two sphere. And that will be important later. So that's why the insertion of NAB can be traded for FAB, where FAB is the following expression. So I literally take this S0, which I erase it, I substitute pk and q as the functions of z and vk, take omega goes to zero limit, and multiply by some polarization tensor, which I erase it. But I want to say that the upshot is the following. So if I look at zz component in complex coordinates, I will see that fzz has a pole at the point where z and zk coincide. And that's what is called a collinear pole. So basically, in four dimensions, you probably know that there are soft divergences. Soft divergences, they are related to this 1 over omega pole in S0. But if you consider massless particles, then you have an additional divergence when your soft photon is collinear with momentum of your massless particle. And this pole in FZZ at a point where z equals zk is exactly the point where momentum of your massless particle is collinear with a soft graviton.
Sorry, Emerson, what was the definition of F again?
So the definition of F is the following. So I take S. Let me basically add zero. So at zero, the following expression. So P dot Q, sum of k. So now I substitute this expression here into S zero, this polarization alpha, and then I multiply by epsilon mu nu ij star dA x hat I dB. So that's the exact definition of it. So it's literally like, I omitted the structure here. So you literally take a structure which you obtained from relating NAB0 and omega A dagger from a mode expansion and just literally substitute it into soft theorem. So I consider some linear combination of Weinberg soft theorems for a different direction of momentum. So the thing which I want to say that this FAB is a function of V, VK, and EK. And apparently it satisfies an interesting differential equation. So this pole that suggests that if I take some d bar of this FZZ, then I may obtain some sum of the delta functions. That usually happens in CFT. But apparently this equation is slightly more complicated, so I actually need to take two covariant derivatives with respect to a metric on a sphere of FID, and that will be given equal to sum over EK delta of Z minus EK. It's two-dimensional delta function, and put root gamma and some factor of 2 pi. So this F satisfies nice differential equation. So now let me use this property of F. And and let me just apply this operator to both left-hand side and right-hand side. So if I apply differential operator, then I will obtain a bunch of delta functions here. And let me further multiply by arbitrary function of V and integrate on two sphere. So in such a way that I will obtain the following expression. I need to be careful about factors of kappa square here. So 1 over kappa square. So it will be 2 pi sum over f of vk times ek in. So that's what will happen if I apply differential operator here, divide by kappa square, and then integrate the delta function against arbitrary function of v. While on the left-hand side, there are no simplifications, so it just, as it was, so it's integral kappa square, integral d to z, f of z, dA, dB, NAB, root gamma, S matrix, instead. So far what I'm doing, I'm just taking some linear combinations of Weinberg soft theorem and applying certain derivatives. So that's like allowed combinations. That's just allowed to write. So now let me define operator QH plus as an operator which acts on out state parameterized by z1, zk, by just sum of f. And let me define qs plus as being equal to this integral. It's a free world. I'm free to choose any definitions I want. Let me erase. I will probably need this. So, and using this expression, I can further rewrite my QS plus in the following form. So, if I put back all the coefficients, 1 over 6 pi j, integral over square plus du dt 0 root gamma. So, integral over du appears when I replace 0 mode by nab itself. Da db nab times function of u. And qh plus is defined by its action on decay state. So there are similar definitions can be made for scry minus, and we will denote them qh minus and qs minus. So then the Weinberg-Soft theorem in this notation has the following form. So I can introduce qf plus minus, which are literally sum over, okay, let me put a minus sign here, the sum qs plus minus. So then what we get that qf plus times s minus s times qf minus in between arbitrary in and out states is zero. So that's sort of as close as we can get to this relation that q commutes with s matrix. So like matrix element of this expression is zero. Okay, so that sort of concludes the step one. When we just took some linear combination of Weinberg-Soft theorem, some derivatives, and we packaged it using these definitions into some form like this. So now I need to convince you that this QH plus, QS plus, and Q total have something to do with BMS transformations written on this blackboard. And that will be a part two. So okay, I don't need all this stuff, so I still want to preserve BMS transformations. Okay, so step two. So let me first look at action of QH plus. So as we discussed, all massless particles, they localize at a point at scry plus. So that's why for sufficiently large R, I can replace any massless state by just a point particle moving on geodesic. So for a point particle, you can show that the stress tensor, the UU component of a stress tensor for a point particle has the following form. So if I look at the limit R goes to infinity, then the first non-trivial term will be order 1 over R square. And it will be of the following form. E is the energy of a massless particle, delta of V minus the function of U and V, delta of U minus UK. So VK is a point where a particle crosses scry plus on a sphere, and UK is a point where the sphere is located on a scry plus. So it's like VK and UK can be in one-to-one correspondence with initial momentum of the particle. Okay. So then the next observation is that this action of QH plus can be obtained from a following integral. So I take limit R goes to infinity of the following expression. So with R square times matter stress tensor times f times root gamma, and I integrate over the whole scry, over d to z, du. So clearly, it does work for a point particle. So I'm claiming that it works for any matter field. So one argument is that any matter field turns essentially into point particle near scry plus. That's why point particle is just sufficient to compute this contribution. So another argument, you can take your favorite matter field, like a scalar field, and literally write commutation relations for a scalar field at scry plus, write TUU for a scalar field at scry plus, and just literally check that this TUU generates this action. OK. So now I can do actually one more rewriting of this expression. So let me notice the following statements, which also holds for both point particles and massless fields, that TUR is of order 1 over RQ, and TRR is of order 1 over R to the 4th. So this expression can be derived purely from energy momentum tensor conservation. So I do not need like, to use point particle. Okay, and let me consider the following combination. Let me consider a combination of T mu matter contracted with my vector field Xi and contracted with a normal vector to R equals constant slice. So let me consider something like R equals constant equals R naught. So the normal vector to R equals constant slice will be simply du minus dr. So I can drop all these dr terms from Xi. So from vector field Xi, I can drop this term because it's order 1 over r. So okay, QA is also order 1 over r squared. So that's why the contribution from this term will be subleading to this term, and contribution from this term will be subleading because of the stress tensor behavior. So clearly, at the limit r goes to infinity, the finite expression is contained in order 1 over. If I multiply by r squared, I obtain a finite limit, which is exactly Tu times f. So literally, I can rewrite this expression in the following way. So let me look at surface r equals constant. Let me call it sigma naught, r equals r naught. And then r naught root gamma will be exactly induced metric on this surface, and d to z du will be exactly induced volume form. And this expression will be like literally t mu nu and mu xi nu. And you can recognize in this expression, okay, and I'm taking r naught goes to infinity. So this expression is just a canonical generator for diffeomorphism acting on matter fields. So we say the stress tensor generates all diffeomorphisms, and canonical generator is just given by this expression.
Except that your surface sigma naught is a
surface fixed R. Okay, so in principle, I can redo the computation where it's a surface of fixed T. So so fixed R is like just like, but it can be written as an integral over Cauchy slice, just to be more explicit. So but you need to like do a little bit more work, like considering T equals constant surface, but the normal vector will be like exactly du, and all this stuff just works out nicely for a Cauchy slice. So I'm saying that it's clear that QH plus is a generator of diffeomorphism, canonical generator of diffeomorphism. Okay, but we also have a contribution from QS plus. And we need to carefully take it into account. Okay, I don't need. So before doing a careful consideration to a QSoft, okay, so H and S subscripts, they stand for a soft operator and hard operator. So we call it hard operator because it acts on just external data. And soft operator is responsible for actually vertex operator which inserts a soft graviton. So a symmetry basically tells you that the matrix element with one more soft graviton is related to a matrix element with some soft operator acting on external state. So just notational thing. Okay, so let me ask a question. When QS, so QS is parameterized by this function of sphere, when QS is zero. So when QS is zero for some specific value F tilde, then total Q is just hard part, and then we should expect that we have a relation that certain subset of supertranslations is actually canonically generated by stress tensor. So in order to solve this equation, let us notice that QS has a structure of F integrated against N. So integrating by parts and using the fact that N is a traceless because C was a traceless, I would say that for all F tildes for which this thing in four dimensions is just d square F times gamma AB, Q soft vanishes. And apparently, all solutions to this equation are given by the following set. So F tilde is A the one, which corresponds to a global time translations, or F tilde is like our best friend X hat of I is a function of V, which corresponds to three other translations GI. So clearly the normal time translations and spatial translations, they do not generate any soft insertions, and we naturally see that the soft theorem just corresponds to translations in time and in space acting on matter field. And that's the total charge. Okay, so
the implication is then that a boost transformation does insert a soft?
So the boost transformation, as I say, so far I discussed only super translational part. So that's why I completely forgot about SO1,3, and boost is a part of S1,3. So, but answer is no. So that is okay. So now let me look at Qsoft. So given the mode expansion, which apparently I erased, you have this A and A dagger, and you have a natural commutation relation that A and A dagger commutes by. Polarization alpha, polarization beta. And we have some expression of CAB and NAB in terms of A and A dagger. So that's why from a mode expansion, we can literally compute what is a commutation relation for N and C. So let me use this complex coordinates. So that's why I do not need to like projecting out traces. So in this case, the independent components are nz and nz bar z bar, and the mixed component is just zero per trace. So let me say that it's inserted at a point u prime. So this expression is 16 pi g. There is an I because it's commutator, and delta function of z minus w. There is another gamma z bar to preserve a tensor structure, and delta of u minus u prime. That can be derived purely from a mode expansion. And that's exactly the same result as was proposed by old Ashtakar's paper when he considered like canonical quantization of radiative phase space. But we don't need all this stuff. We can just use a mode expansion. So from this result, you can see that, that this expression generates, so if I look at commutator of I times commutator of QS plus with CZZ, just to have a transformation on CZZ, you will see that it's literally proportional to dz square f. So there is actually a fancy problem with a coefficient here, which requires some additional work in properly defining additional zero modes, because QS is actually a function of zero mode of n. And zero mode of n formally is not quite in radiative Hilbert space. So we need to enlarge radiative Hilbert space and carefully treat zero mode of n. And then doing this careful treatment, you can obtain a correct coefficient, which is minus dv square f. And you don't have this term because you don't have any external gravitons. So in the presence of external gravitons, then you can also reproduce this term. So QS plus is generating the BMS transformation on gauge field, QH plus generating also proper diffeomorphism acting on matter fields. So hopefully that convinces you that these charges, which we introduce is literally from some fancy writing of a soft theorem, are actually corresponds to generators of BMS transformation. Given some proper modification of radiative phase space, including some bracket structure. But for matter fields, it's still OK to use just radiative phase space. So the zero mode is only causes problem for gravitons itself. And let me do one more remark, which is I can actually use Einstein equations, which is in particular constraint part of Einstein equations, if I just look at linearized limit. So I can drop n square term So then constraint equation has roughly a structure like this. I think it's wonderful. And you can show that classically QS plus QH plus classically means using this constraint equation can be written in the following nice form. So it's chi plus integral of f du m 1 over 4 pi g. Okay, there is some root gamma g to z du. And now under the reasonable assumption that the mass aspect vanishes at scribe plus plus, which is t equals infinity. So assuming that there are no massive particles in our problem, which means that nothing survives the scribe plus. So all radiation is sort of exits Minkowski space at some finite value of u. And if you consider no massive particle, then nothing can survive till scribe plus plus. So under this physical assumption, the total charge QF is a pure boundary term at exactly scribe plus minus. So this point is scribe plus minus, okay, which is roughly something like I naught. So it's F times the integral of mass aspect times root gamma g to z du. Oh, sorry, g to z. And this expression is exactly the classical charge for BMS symmetry derived by Ashtakar, Strobel, and derived in like modern methods by Volt and Zupas. So this expression is fairly known in all this BMS business. So on a classical level, you can show that our quantum charge is actually has this nice classical limit which coincides with a known result. Okay, can you say me how much time do I left? So
minus five.
Okay, let me just say.
This last bit was an aside, right? You didn't really need this assumption of triviality and feature infinity and writing in this one boundary term for your main argument, did you?
For which argument?
It's true that this is some classic form, but it's a classic form, again, given that same assumption, triviality of future infinity. If you had some more general assumption of future infinity, you still have the right expression for this.
Yeah, so this expression is still generates the right transformations.
Yeah.
But then arises the question whether it has some non-trivial physical application, because all these like CK spaces, which we believe has some.
You wouldn't derive this soft theorem, but the soft theorem involves massive. Does the Weinberg soft theorem hold for massive particles?
Okay, let me like tell a couple of comments. So far, there is like one important part of the business which was behind the scenes here, is that actually we need to have some discussion of how we're going to match fields across the I node. So far in our discussion, we kind of discussed scribe plus and scribe minus independently, and I didn't discuss how we're going to match fields. And in order to do a matching, so in order to do matching, I may actually need to use some non-mathematical theorems. So for example, for Christodoulou and Kleinermann spaces, you can actually estimate asymptotics of various components of a Weyl tensor, and it's fairly under control near I naught. So you may hope that there is a nice matching. And for CK spaces, this condition is actually true. So that's why it may happen that in the cases when you can actually do a matching across the I naught, this condition follows as a natural bonus.
Regarding matching, so that seems like it would naturally come from your regulator, where you get the two scribes from a trajectory that are near infinity. If you regulate like that, then they're
there's a geometric matching. The question is whether it translates into a matching of all the structures you need.
Well, if not, then
there's a certain sense in which space-like infinity is a notoriously singular point in the formal compactification. And so it's a question of how to deal with that issue.
Yeah, so I would say that for matter fields, the matching is okay, so you can just like use these trajectories and stuff. But for gravity field itself, it's a more subtle. So clearly we expect the final result will be some kind of smoothness along the null geodesic, which goes from a scry minus to a scry plus in conformal quantification. So that's what you expect as a final result. But in order to prove it mathematically, we actually need more structure. So at least at the current level of discussion, it seems that if we are dealing with Christodoulou-Clenermann spaces, we are fine. So maybe it holds for more general setups. But just as a base point, as kind of set of non-trivial examples, we can apply all this relation to Christodoulou and Clenermann spaces, which are fairly non-trivial solutions to Einstein equations with just initial data which is small enough on Cauchy's line. So that's why it's still physically relevant, and this correspondence has some non-empty physical application. Just to be safe, we will restrict ourselves to this subclass of solution. But it might be true that you can continue this to a general solution.
But I lost track of how this relates to your target, which was this Weinberg soft graviton theorem of generalizations. And those theorems, are the external matter particles allowed to be massive, or do they have to be massless as well?
No, for a Weinberg soft theorem, it is as good for a massive particles as good for a massless particle. And so far, we don't have a good interpretation of Weinberg soft theorem for a massive particle. So far, all magic is what's happening on scry plus.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And we don't know whether you can play the same game at spatial infinity. So we don't know the answer. And the possible answer might be that there is no this magic with localization. So for our derivation, the crucial step was this localization, that massless wave packages, they localize at a point on the two sphere. And I don't think that it's true for a massive particles which approach the spatial infinity.
No.
So then it may not work. Like that's a good point. That sort of saying a couple words in high dimensions. So basically, like another point is that in high dimensions, Weinberg-Soft theorem is a statement about multiple polarizations. So basically, you have as much functions on n-dimensional sphere as you have physical polarizations in higher dimension. And generally, there is only single linear combination which is controlled by asymptotic symmetry. So even in a massless case, it's not quite one-to-one matching between all possible Weinberg-Soft theorems and asymptotic symmetry. So in four dimensions, you can play a game of complexification when you actually have one relation for a complex F, which is, strictly speaking, not quite physical BMS transformation, because you want a real F. But then, complexifying F, you can actually obtain a pair of relations for as a Weinberg-Soft theorem for a pair of polarizations. But it's not true in high dimensions. That's why it generally not true that so soft theorem controls all Weinberg soft relations. So that's why it may happen that for massive particles, there is no simple symmetry explanation for a Weinberg soft theorem. Okay. Are there any more questions?
Okay, that's thanks a lot. Well, really ready for final questions, let me just ask again. So, if I understood correctly,
okay.
Step one here was really an assumption of the whole business. It wasn't proven in any way. But the statement is that, assuming step one, you get this lovely result, which is true. So that's sort of evidence that step one is in fact true. Is that the right way?
No, I would say that step one is rather straightforward to writing a Weinberg-Soft theorem. So if you believe in Weinberg-Soft theorem, then you can combine a Weinberg-Soft theorem into this statement. So you can define always this QF plus, QF minus, written in terms of mode operators and some simple actions on external data. So step one can always be done, at least in the maskless case. So step two is...
Step one is the rewriting.
But step two is a complicated thing, because given this expression for charges, you actually need to supply some set of commutation relations from somewhere. And it's typically not enough to have a commutation relation from just radiative modes, because your charges are actually written in terms of some zero modes. So you need to carefully enlarge your Gilbert space, and then you need to check that you're enlarging it consistently, that your brackets, they preserve all this nice structure. And that's why going from step one to a step two requires some assumptions which probably physically reasonable, because you arrive into physically reasonable result in this setup.
But the logic of your talk is in your title. You're sort of starting with the soft theorem and using it to argue that there is an asymptotic symmetry.
Yes. Yeah, so in four dimensions, you can actually go both ways. So four dimensions are easy. So in our paper, we actually go in reversing the logic. So we start with all this canonical definition of charges, define brackets, and arrive into a soft theory. But this going in this direction can be generalizable to a higher dimensions and to some subleading soft factors. So it's sort of, this direction is more general, but sometimes you can go backward. Yeah.
So you do expect step one to also be valid for the subleading term?
So like talking about subleading terms, you can clearly write both S1 and S2 as some kind of operators here. So for S1, the operators will be very similar to what we have for S0. So for F1, it still will be, at least action on the matter fields, will be exactly canonical action for a vector field which corresponds to a super rotation. So it's like manifestly local, because it's written in terms of stress tensor integrated against some vector fields. And the same holds for a Q-soft. So in the case of S2, situation is slightly different, because this action on external state Z1 Zk is a local action, because you just multiply by energy. So multiplying by energy has taken u derivative. So in the case of S1, you will like literally have one less power of energy by just power quantity. So it's still a local action, or you will have some terms like Ek d over dk, which is like Fourier transform of UDU. So the problem is that when you try to go for S2, then you will have some terms which will have 1 over energy in momentum precession. So naively you would say that in position representation, this action is somehow non-local. But you can show that nevertheless, it's still generated by some local expression in terms of a stress tensor. So and we do not know like what is the meaning of this, whether it has some nice physical meaning or there is like internal problem with this, like one over energy going to position space.
Could there also be exact in the sense that the leading, the Weinberg term, the leading soft theorem, that is exact in, for all values of the coupling? I mean, it's true.
It's whole for any loop.
But S1, S2, I think, we expect to receive loop corrections, right?
Yeah. So S1 and S2, which I wrote, they strictly speaking were derived at a three-level assumption. Right. And it is believed that S1 has a correction at one loop.
Yeah.
However, there is this interesting paper by Freddy Cacciazzo when he claims that there is a fancy order of limit issue that you can take certain... So there are two limits. It's like omega, it's soft limit, and another limit which is taken regulator to zero or dimensional regularization to a four dimension. So basically, if you kind of take limits in a different order, you can actually show that there is no one loop correction to S1. And so far, it's not clear whether there is some physical meaning to this result. Because it may happen that there is some good set of asymptotic states which are not plane waves, but rather some solutions to a different equation. So like not asymptotically free states, but some other set of asymptotic states where S matrix is free of IR divergences. And in this setup, the S1 might be also exact in the same way as the zero. But it's not clear whether it's true. So there is this interesting hypothesis, and it's kind of motivated from a gravity, because in a gravity we kind of don't see this loop corrections. Or so it's an interesting set of questions, but we don't know.
Okay. The suggestion is the loop correction is something to do with some IR divergence in the problem.
That's how we derive the loop correction. That's
I see. So as you say, this is just a symmetry argument. You wouldn't really expect a non-trivial correction.
So for this symmetry argument, it's also not clear, because at some point we actually use Einstein equations, which means that it's on a gravity we kind of deal with tree-level results. So for gravity, like just to be safe, we're only claiming tree-level result for both S0 and S1.
If you added a higher gravity term and treated it as an effective theory, it would change the results significantly?
I'm not sure, because we're actually taking like omega goes to zero limit, which is low energy limit.
Yeah.
Which means that Einstein gravity is like IR fixed point for, right? So it might be that on the gravity, on the symmetry side, at least some linear combination of Weinberg-Sopp theorems holds, like is protected from loop corrections. But it is too far, it is too early to make such a claim.
I think also Kachetov's calculation was in N equals 8, so it was not really trivial.
No, but all magic in his computation was changing order of limits. So this change of order of limits can be done for n equals 0. So that's why n equals 8 was not important part. The important part was order of limits issue.
It's known that there is this non-trivial one-loop correction, or just suspected there might be? It's stated that it's not proven that it doesn't exist, or is it stated?
No, so the statement is that that if you that if you look like if you look on an S matrix in plane wave basis,
yeah.
Then I think in this approach you will have one loop correction. But it's not clear whether it's one loop correction because S matrix is not well defined in plane wave basis, and mm-hmm. and this one loop is generated by trying to properly define S matrix. So it's not clear that in a proper basis. So we believe that there exists some nice basis where S matrix is well defined in a gravity. So it's like a general belief. And there are a couple of attempts in order to write the proper basis. So maybe in this basis where S matrix is finite, then maybe S1 is exact.
So is there a similar one-loop correction at higher dimensions where you wouldn't expect any IR problems?
So in high dimensions you clearly don't have a soft divergence. So I'm not sure what happened to collinear divergences. So some divergences are clearly dimension controlled, and I think the collinear they are also dimension dependent because it's angular integral divided by like 1 minus cosine theta. So angular integral is bigger. Yeah. So in high dimensions it may happen that there is no. Yeah. So it may happen that high dimensions would be a good testing ground for S1. And other stuff. Yeah.
So, bigger picture question. So, what do you hope to ultimately learn from this? You know, there is a relationship between, very long wavelength gravitons and basically gauge transformations, which is sort of implicit in Weinberg's original result, but fleshed out more by this. But beyond that, what can this teach us about gravity?
Let me answer in like long way. So I will start with this like very successful result of application of asymptotic symmetry groups to explain Bekenstein-Hawking formula. So we clearly say that somehow the knowledge that your gravity states are in the presentation of some sufficiently big group with some central extension provides you with just enough information to estimate the number of states. So that's why the knowledge that your quantum gravity states are in representation of some big enough group might be good to just compute in some quantity.
But this is not a very nice group for that purpose.
No, no, okay. That's the next step. So next step is that if you look at original BMS group consists of just rotations and supertranslations. So this group have no chance of being like non-trivially centrally extended. So supertranslations, they are abelian, and all this group is like has like trivial commutators except SO31, which okay. So however, if you look at S1 and carry this procedure, you will see that the asymptotic symmetry group is actually bigger than SO3,1. So SO3,1 is actually enlarged to include arbitrary supertranslation. So previously they were excluded because you don't have a global conformal Killing vector fields on a sphere with no singular point. So there are only six of them. So basically, the existence of S1 soft theorem and its translation to asymptotic symmetry suggests that there is some non-trivial physical application for considering conformal Killing vector fields on a sphere with singularity. So we know that at least the word identity for such symmetry has some non-trivial physical meaning in the form of Weinberg, of subleading Weinberg soft theorem. That's why it is very suggestive to enlarge asymptotic symmetry group in four dimensions to include both supertranslations and superrotation. In this context, there is an actually non-trivial central extension. So actually, there is like a nice work by Barnich where he just like literally assumed that you can extend rotations to a super rotations, and he actually tried to make sense of central charge, of central extension for such a larger group on top of Kerr black hole background. And he actually claimed that there are some divergent central charges, but nevertheless it's some divergent integral proportional to a J, which is very suggestive in context of Kerr CFT correspondence, where we actually say that CFT which lives in near horizon geometry of Kerr black hole also have the central charge of 12J. So I'm saying that that this knowledge that the Weinberg soft theorem generates some asymptotic symmetries may give us a new look on set of boundary conditions which are low. So previously we do not see these large groups because we impose a too strong boundary condition. And there was no clearly good physical judgment whether you should consider these boundary conditions on some weaker set. So the only argument was that you have Killing vector fields with no singularities. But in conformal field theory, we're dealing with like Virasoro transformations which are not exponentiable, which cannot be exponentiated because of the singularity, and still obtain a rich structure of two-dimensional CFTs. That's why the soft theorem, they are very suggestive for enlarging the known asymptotic symmetry groups, for example, in gravity. Like in high dimensions, you expect that there might be supertranslation, despite the classical result that BMS group is just isometry group. And having a larger symmetry in gravity, you might expect that this larger symmetry at some level survives in the quantum theory, and that somehow all gravitational states are in representation of this symmetry, and there might be some interesting result, like a result which was in Kerr CFT, when pure symmetry argument was just enough to prove some very non-trivial conjecture. So that's the whole for now.
Why the BMS group wasn't nice, this was different in spirit. Now, I just worry about the fact, I worry about the fact that the BMS group automatically gives you an infinite degeneracy for the ground state, and enlarging it just makes it even worse. So you can't just, you certainly can't just count states in a simple way.
But
some divergence you can factor out and give them.
No, but infinite degeneracy is actually what is compatible with the soft divergence. So soft divergences, like one way of looking at them is that if you have some Hamiltonian with degenerate ground state,
yeah,
then you typically have all this log divergence if you just exponentiate. So I'm saying that the fact that we have infinite number of degenerate ground states by adding these zero modes, it actually, at least in four dimensions, it naturally fits in the picture of infrared divergences. That infrared divergences is exactly a degeneracy effect for the generated vacuum. So, and the same thing might be true in higher dimensions, that that statement sounds something like a usual Goldstone statement, that it really, if you have infinitely degenerate vacuum, then you have exactly zero transition amplitude between like particular vacuum on one side, particular vacuum on another side. So the only non-trivial amplitudes when you have some set of vacuum or some linear combination of possible vacuum. So I think there is still no contradiction with the statement that the degenerate vacuum, they are nicely fit to infrared divergences, at least in four dimensions. And there might be a way that they will like cancel each other, that this approach might be some physically relevant approach to properly attack the infrared divergences in gravity. So like another possible application, which is like really crazy application to a four dimension, is that you have like a lot of stuff which lives on two-dimensional sphere. So that's why you might hope that maybe there is some way of writing some bulk expressions as a CFT correlators on a sphere. But that's really maybe too crazy of application. More questions?
Okay, let's thank the slow again.